Welcome back to the Auto Body Podcast presented by Clarity Coat. And actually, welcome back, because this is the very first episode. And we have a great first interview today. We've got a guy by the name of Clay on today. And Clay, would you mind just kind of introducing yourself, where you're at, what the name of your shop is, and let's get this ball rolling.
Awesome, man. Well, my name is Clay Holbright. I'm the owner of a body shop here in Wichita, Kansas, called Best Body Shop. And we're a modern collision repair facility.
Are you guys the best body shop in Wichita?
Absolutely. in fact, I would stretch it out a little further. When we very first named our shop Best Body Shop, you should have seen the amount of heads rolling on Facebook. Who do you think you are calling yourself Best Body Shop? Like, ooh. Yep. Yeah, it was fun.
Okay. So, I mean, let's talk about that. How did you get all started?
Yeah. So, I've been in the industry for about 20 years now. I actually drove by, in the back of my mom and dad's car by a body shop. And I was about that age where, you know, you start to think about, man, I got to do something with my life. And we live real close to a body shop. And every day that we drove by, I looked through the window and I could see inside the shop. And I thought that'd be a really cool place to work. And, so I actually went and applied and they said, do you have any skills? I said, no. And they said, well, where do I go get skills? And I said, well, you find it in the shop. And I said, well, do I go to school for it? And they're like, oh, no, don't go to school. You're not going to learn anything there. I'm like, well, how do I get it? And they're like, you just have to be in a shop. And I'm like, well, how do I get in a shop if I don't have skills? And they said, just figure it out. Yep. So I went to every body shop in Wichita trying to get a job. And every single one of them said the same thing. I had a few people laugh and say, you know, get out of the industry. You don't want in this. And a few people said, you're never going to get in. And so I went to Walmart and got a third shift job at Walmart, and then went back to the first body shop and worked for a year for free to build build some skills.
Nice.
That's how I got into the industry. And I always had this entrepreneurial itch where no matter what, I had something going on in the garage, and that garage grew to the point where it could move into a shop. And I started what's called C. Holbright for Customs in a little 2,700 square foot shop that's actually adjacent to the shop that we have now. No running water, no bathroom, no paint booth, one paint gun, and a 50-year-old compressor that barely ran. And I just grinded all the way up to where we finally were able to purchase the building that we're in now, which is a 10,000 square foot shop. We do have a bathroom and running water, so that was an upgrade for sure.
But you just got that within like the last year or so, right?
That was like last week. We finally got the bathroom last week. Tired of going to the gas station.
Spending so much money on Gatorade every time I go there.
Originally we named it C. Holbright for Customs because I was going to build hot rods. You know, at the previous jobs that I had, I got into metal work and I just fell in love with fabrication and what it did to my mind. It just opened my mind to, I didn't know you could just make a quarter panel. I didn't know you could just make parts. And so I fell in love with that side. It wasn't until we got into, you know, I started touching a little bit of collision work and I saw how just absolutely upside down and inside out the collision industry was, that it really attracted me to want to fix it. You know, I had a lot of people that said, you know, when I started seeing what was happening to the general consumer, I instantly just went, well, what's going on here? I started meeting with other body shops and other technicians and I went, why isn't anybody taking care of these problems? And everyone said my magic word, and that is, oh, it's impossible. And I went, well, now that you say that, I kind of have to do something.
Well, before you dive into that too much. So obviously it sounds like you came from some pretty humble beginnings. And would you say that this is kind of the norm as to how people get started in the industry, as far as the US goes anyways?
Absolutely. I see a lot of technicians that turn into body shop owners at some point. You know, and in fact, that was one of the first things that I hired a company called Auto Damage Experts at some point. And a lot of the problems that I was seeing in the industry and a lot of problems that I was experiencing in my own shop was explained to me by Barrett Smith, the owner of the consulting company, that essentially said, well, you're not a businessman. You're a technician that owns a body shop. And so he said, you have to become a businessman to understand how to run a business versus you're a technician right now that's just doing the best you can to keep the place going. And there were a lot of things that I thought were success that weren't really success. Like having a shop full of cars is not success. If your profit margins are negative 5%, you know, you're the busiest shop going out of business. And those are hard lessons that I had to learn throughout the last 8 years of owning Best Body Shop.
So I would like to interject just a real quick personal story on this, because it actually relates to myself quite a bit as well, which is, so you and I, we talked very briefly before the, before we got onto the podcast. And, you know, I kind of told you that I actually am not in the body shop industry. I'm not a painter and I've never really been in it, but I've been in service-based industry my entire life. And, one of those jobs was I used to be a diesel mechanic. And so I used to work on ag equipment, semis, construction equipment, all that kind of stuff. And something that was interesting that you said, which is I went to college for diesel technology. Yeah. And when I stepped foot into that shop, I might as well have just pissed away that $25,000 that I spent on college, because it was pretty much useless. Not only do you just get thrown into the fire, like I actually think that, no, I can 100% say that my first week I got tossed onto what's called a Cummins ISX engine. So it's a 15 liter big old diesel engine. And they said, rebuild it. And I just looked and I was like, what? I was like,
you took your college degree and you're like, how do I fix it with this?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this paper doesn't exactly tighten bolts. And so very quickly, as time went on, I realized that the things that you learn in college help-ish, but you have to do more work in forgetting what you learned in college than, than it would just be easier if you just started off in the industry like it sounds like a lot of people do, which is you go into a shop and like you said, you work for free for a year to learn just the basics of body work. And then you work your way up from there. I think the service-based industries that are out there right now, electricians, plumbers, HVAC techs, mechanics in general, you're going to see a huge resurgence in apprentice work in the next decade. I'd say
I know for our sector, for our business alone, it's almost a joke that us business or the us body shop owners, when somebody comes in with a you know, some kind of a piece of paper from a technician school, it's almost like it'd be better not to hire them. They come in with a bunch of really bad knowledge and a head full of pride that usually an instructor has said, oh yeah, you can go out there and make six figures and you can kill it and you can, you know, and then they get in and it's like, dude, this isn't anything like it was in the classroom. Yeah. I mean, I have, one of my, you know, my top tech right now, he went to a pretty well-known technical college, and he tells me all the time he regrets wasting the 25, 30 grand that he spent. It was just a complete waste. He didn't earn anything out of it. He didn't get anything out of it.
Yeah. So, I guess, okay. So let's go back to what you were talking about, which is you originally set this up to start working on hot rods, doing, custom work. So Were you pretty reasonably successful at doing that? And that's the reason why you ended up going into the collision part of it? Or was it that you saw this challenging collision work and you're like, oh, well, I'm going to dive, you know, balls deep into this and get my hands dirty and figure this out?
Without a shadow of a doubt, the collision industry just turned me on. I mean, when there was that level of challenge, I'm an extremely competitive. I'm a freak when it comes to wanting to win. And I tried to do both at the same time. I actually had, you know, the hot rods and the collision at the same time. And the crazy thing is we still do like a couple restorations every once in a while. But without a shadow of a doubt, we focus on like all of our energy and what we're doing to grow our business and where we're expanding is without a shadow of a doubt into the collision side. And the hot rod side, I've gotten a fork in a road where I felt like I could either go all in on the hot rod side or all in on the collision side. I couldn't do both. And the collision side made more sense to me because there was something tied to it. And that was consumers that were consistently getting screwed. I mean, and I'm not talking about, oh, colors not matching. Oh, I mean, there was just a lot of stuff. The collision industry, if the general consumer knew 10% of what was going on in 90% of the body shops, if not more percentage of the body shops that are going on in this country, I mean, it would be on every 60 minutes. It would be on, you know, it is crazy. And so, yeah, it was a challenge that really woke me up and turned me on to wanting to be a part of the solution.
Okay, I want to dive into that, but real quick, just from my business curiosity, what is it? Why is it that custom repair, you know, doing hot rods and stuff like that, you can't really do both businesses at the same time?
They're completely two different business models, and that's something that I found out really hard. That, you know, it's like having a sandwich shop in a pizza joint and trying to use the same, you know, tools and equipment to create your product. It takes a different setup. It takes a different technician. It takes a different mindset. I mean, there's so many, and I tried my hardest to work out processes that would flow between both. And the reality is it's just completely different. And I was a technician myself. And I had to mentally go through every time I'd switch from a collision to a hot rod. I had to almost like mentally go, okay, this is it's a different pace. I mean, the whole thing. Now you add on to that a lot of the changes to the collision business, like the tools and equipment that's required, the training that's required, the safety aspect of the vehicles and how intricate they are and how engineered they are. The spread is becoming more and more aggressive, and that is not going to slow down by any means.
No.
So, you know, it's completely different businesses.
Very interesting. Okay. So, I mean, you're chomping at the bit. I can feel it. you're talking about, some of the practices in the, collision industry, not being quite up to par. Now before you kind of go just hellfire on it and just burning the industry down, I'm really curious as to where do you think that push is coming from? Is it coming from consumers wanting to get their vehicle back faster than ever before? Is it coming from insurance companies wanting to get the repairs done as cheap as possible? Is it coming from the body shops wanting to get as much profit margin as possible from the work? What's your opinion on that?
It's coming from serving the wrong master. It's coming from a lot of people in our industry hate the insurance companies. And they blame the insurance company for everything that's wrong with it. Mm-hmm. The truth is the insurance company isn't the problem. It's the body shops that are allowing it to happen.
Interesting. Okay.
Very similar to the medical industry. The medical industry, at some point you see doctors that are prescribing you know, medicine instead of holistic health, because they've got Pfizer or whatever, you know, pharmacy of the month offering to buy them a new Beamer, you know? And so who's to blame, the insurance company or the drug company, or is it the doctor that allows it? You know, I tell my consumers all the time, I said, you know, which one would you be more mad at, the thief that robs you or the person that opens the door for the thief? So my angst and my anger, if you want to call it, is directed 100% towards the body shops that allow this. Without a shadow of a doubt, there is a system that is set up to make a owner of a body shop extraordinarily successful financially, while giving up the technicians and the customers in trade for that income. And when I became privy to this, whenever I found out about this, I've got a cement foundation of morals and ethics that my parents poured down for many years that I couldn't get along with it. In fact, I was flabbergasted. I was almost taken back. I'll tell you, my first experience is when an insurance adjuster walked out of my shop, turned around, winked at me, and like did a finger gun. And he goes, "Hey, remember, don't tell him about that tail light." And I went, "I didn't know we were doing something bad." come to find out, you know, the customer didn't want an aftermarket tail light in, and I was doing what I thought was the right thing by just getting along with the insurance company. And come to find out, that's, again, this is where Barrett comes in and says, "Well, that's because you're a technician, not a business owner. You were thinking about it as a technician." And so I had to learn a lot about communicating to the consumer and being transparent with them, and allowing them involved in the repair process, which is almost, it's like, that's so opposite of how the collision industry operates. You know, you generally.
That's really interesting. Sorry to interrupt. Because I have a little bit of a personal story to that. So my personal vehicle is a 2018 Audi S5, and I got into a hit and run here just a couple of months ago in the parking lot. Front fender, hood, bumper, and and the wheel needed to be replaced because it was scratched, right?
Yeah.
And I took it to a local body shop to get a quote from them, because, you know, I was going to do the typical thing where you take it to three body shops, get quotes from all of them, and then, you know, choose your repair, right?
Yeah.
And what was interesting to me was the first body shop that I went to, I get the estimate back, and I didn't really so much care about what it was going to cost, right? Because, like, at the end of the day, like, I was just going to pay my deductible. But I did want to make sure that OEM parts were going to be going into it, because it's not that old of a car, right? And so in the line items or whatever, it was like the insurance company said, or I don't know if it was the insurance company or if it was the body shop, but in there it was like OEM like replacement or junkyard replacement for this, you know, whatever. Like, I can't remember exactly what the line items were. I'm sitting there looking at it, I'm like, why the hell would I put junkyard fucking parts on this car? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And then after thinking about it even more, I've got the radar system in the front bumper, right? And the headlights have like a special kind of calibration to them and everything like that. Outside of just your typical like headlight leveling part of it. Yeah. And I was like, I was sitting there thinking to myself, I was like, okay, so if I go to a third party, quote unquote, a third party body shop, they're probably going to have to take it over to Audi anyways to get all this stuff calibrated in, because none of those shops had the proper, is it ADAS? Is that correct?
Yeah. ADOS.
Mm-hmm. Yep. ADOS. They didn't have any of that machinery, because I asked them. Yep. And I was like, oh, okay, so that's going to add at least a day or two onto the repair. And so I go to Audi and I get an estimate from them, and sat down, talked with the body shop owner. Guy was amazing and great. Yep. He's like, here's the paint line that we use. This is the one that's certified by Audi. We have to, and whether or not how much of this is true, I don't know, but I would like to believe it's true, is he said that we can't actually put aftermarket parts on your car, because if we do that and Audi finds out, we get fined from it. Now, the only problem I had with the entire repair process was there was, for example, like the headlight. Mm-hmm. The headlight was just marked or barely scuffed. And I'm looking at it as a detailer and I'm like, I could sand that down and buff it out pretty easy. And he's like, nope, we're going to throw in a whole new headlight in there. And I'm like, seems a little bit excessive. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm sure there's some sort of like repair procedure that he's following. That's like saying, well, you know, if the headlight's even slightly damaged, one of the motors might go out later down the road and then you're liable for it, blah, blah, blah.
Well, not only that, there's a UV protection coat on that headlight,
right,
that once you sand and polish it, it will later on, or has the ability to later
oxidize
on,
out,
yep, oxidize and break down.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. No, and you are right. There is, you know, if you carry a certification with some of the manufacturers, they do audit, some manufacturers audit your files and find out whether you've been using the right parts or not, you know?
Yep. And it was an awesome experience because he brought me into the back of the parts room and he's like, we have to keep all of these parts on hand because of that same process you're talking about, the audit part of it. It was just really, it was really interesting. So the repair gets done I ended up going with the dealership or whatever. In my personal opinion, they knocked it out of the park. It was awesome. All the gaps and everything like that, were dead on and even all the way around. So, kudos to them for doing that. But,
And you had touched something. You'd said I think there's a procedure there's actually procedures on every single aspect of the entire vehicle. Mm-hmm. You see, the thing that's changed the most about the vehicles is we don't have vehicles that are modes of transportation anymore. Vehicles are computers on wheels that are made to absorb energy, control where that energy goes, read that energy, and then communicate to an airbag system and a safety system. And the entire purpose of a vehicle is to keep the occupant safe.
Yep.
And so the way they do that is extreme amounts of engineering, a ton of different substrates, and a lot of crash tests and going through and figuring out exactly where that energy is going to go through at what angle. That's why, you know, it's crucially important that every body shop pull those procedures, but not just pull the procedures, but actually follow them. We actually put on classes on how to pull procedures. And I will tell you, it is scary because we have people flying in from all over the country and almost nobody has even pulled procedures or know how to pull procedures. And I'm going, well, how are we repairing cars? What you end up having to do is just use your personal experience. And if you're not an engineer, or especially an engineer for, in your case, at Audi, well, then you have no idea the design aspect of the vehicle and why they use the 17 different substrates and the seam sealer and the glue and the different welds, you know. And so if you can't put it back the way it was designed, well, then you have no idea what's going to happen on a subsequent accident or whether it's going to be safe or not.
That is, I mean, obviously, I'm on the outside of the industry, but I mean, to me, that makes a lot of sense because so when doing mechanic work, you have repair procedures, right? Like you have torque specs and specific silicones and stuff like that that you're supposed to use with specific kinds of gaskets and stuff like that. Now, I would say that there's a heck of a lot more wiggle room to doing mechanical repairs than body repairs.
100%.
So it's very interesting to me that it's something that has been overlooked as much as what you're saying as it has in the industry, if it's such a crucial part of the whole repair procedure. So do you think a lot of that comes from the fact that for consumers, really all they care about is if the paint kind of sort of matches on the outside and like basically just cosmetic stuff, and they have zero idea what to look for under the hood? Well,
let me ask you a question real quick. If you had a heart disease, if you just found out that you have a heart disease and you needed to go to have heart surgery, do you know anything about hearts?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no, I don't, but I see where you're going with it.
So you would have to really rely on trusting the doctor, correct?
Yep.
And so the challenge is you walk into some of these shops that are dedicated insurance, man, how do I say this politically correct? I mean, they're on their knees for the insurance company. They're in bed with them. They're in contract with them.
Yep.
And their main, and when I say who's the master that they're serving, when you make your business focused on pleasing an insurance company, well, what do you think the insurance company wants? They want to save money and they want to make a quick repair. Well, if a consumer doesn't know any better, he thinks, well, as long as the repair is correct and it looks good and it's quick, I'm all in for that. But when you start to educate, much like that Audi dealership did with you, we do the exact same thing. Every customer that comes in gets a full tour of the entire shop and gets a full tour of the process. And the importance behind it is much like going into surgery. A doctor never says, just lay down, we'll do the surgery, we'll tell you about it later. No, they sit down and they explain it to you, and they bring out a 3D model, and they go over it until you are comfortable and confident enough to direct the doctor. You've never seen a doctor say, I'm going to make a decision for you. No, he always looks at you and he, as a humble service provider, and says, I would love to do the surgery. This is what I think we need to do, but I need you to sign here to say that's what you want to. And I'm telling you, you go to a doctor and you tell a doctor, I don't trust you, I don't believe you, but go ahead and do the surgery. They're going to go, no, thank you.
Yeah. So where I'm at, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, we actually have two major, major medical providers here, like nationally ranked medical providers. And real quick story. I have torn my ACL in my knee once before. And my other knee was acting the exact same way. Now, there's a specific test that you can do on your knee called the flexion test that tells the doctor whether or not, you know, one of your ligaments is gone. Well, my quads are so strong that it actually holds the knee in place just fine without actually needing the ligament. So,
oh, no.
So I passed these tests with flying colors. And the reason why I know that is because I didn't actually know I tore my ACL until finally the doctor's like, I don't know what is wrong with your knee. Like, we're just going to have to get an MRI. And then he comes in, he's like, yeah, that fucker is gone. Like, now, I don't know where it's at in your body, but it's just, now, it's
can
just
you
gone.
Can you imagine that doctor walking into you? Now think this is like day one class that I learned, and it just woke me up. Doctor walks into your off or into your waiting room or wherever you are, right? The doctor's office. And he goes, hey, man, your ACL is absolutely gone. We have to go in and do a surgery. Then he turns around and walks into another room and forgets to shut your door and has a meeting with the insurance company that says, hey, we're not paying for an ACL. You tell him that it's arthritis and we'll give him some over-the-counter medicine. And you walk, he walks right back in and says, hey, you know what? I misspoke. You actually have arthritis. Now, how pissed off would you be?
Yeah. Or he goes, the insurance company goes, just put a rubber band in there and don't put an actual ligament.
Yeah. And so the challenge is we're seeing that every single day. The challenge is that they actually shut the door and you have no idea the conversation even happened. And so they're prescribing an absolute terrible repair that will yield in an unsafe vehicle on the road that could hurt or kill the entire occupants in the vehicle, if not put to safety or put into risk of safety the people around that vehicle. And it happens all the time. We actually do what's called post-repair inspections. I don't know if you've ever heard of those, but we actually inspect vehicles after they've been repaired at other shops. And I have never, in the Wichita, Kansas, I have never done a post-repair inspection that didn't yield in significant amount of rework or the vehicle just being bought back from the body shop that did the poor repairs. And it's crazy because when you catch them, like we've got a 2019 Mitsubishi Outlander that we're working on right now. And it's crazy. Customer, you know, is up in arms and going, you know, something's wrong. And the insurance is telling the body shop, you know, telling her, oh, well, it's the body shop's problem. The body shop's telling them, well, it's the insurance problem. They bring the car to us. We disassemble it, write the damage assessment, find all the hidden little damage that they didn't fix or things that didn't calibrate correctly or whatever. And all of a sudden now you have the insurance company going, oh, I can't believe the body shop would do such a terrible repair. And then you got the body shop going, oh, I can't believe the insurance would dictate such a terrible repair. Yep. And the customer is going, no, you guys were together, but you got caught. And the only reason why you got caught, because I went to somebody that I can actually trust. That's the biggest problem. And here's the large umbrella. Everyone's like, oh, well, that seems pretty simple. Just be honest, ethical, moral, and do the right thing and stand up for the consumer. Yeah. If you do that, you become a enemy of the insurance company and they'll do everything they can to shut you down.
Yeah. I mean, to a point, it's kind of like saying, well, Amazon should just be, you know, a good company. Like Google just shouldn't sell all of your data to other companies when your entire business model, I don't know if I personally would go as far as say like deceiving customers and stuff like that. I mean, I'll let you say that, but I'm not in a position to where I feel like I could confidently make a call like that.
Bro, we've got body shops in Wichita that are certified in, like, we just did a 2020 Chevy Blazer. They are certified in Chevrolet and GM. And they went directly against General Motors guidelines. I'm going, this isn't a lack of education. This is a lack of ethics. They purposely cut corners. And when they got caught, guess what? Oh, let's just put it away. How do we hush this thing up? Let's, you know, I've had customers offered to pay extra to sign an NDA to not talk about it, you know?
Wow. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, the point that I was going to make is changing business models, because in a way that is basically changing your business model, you're gonna have to upend a lot of your processes and everything like that. It's a really tough thing to do, and if you've got guys that are in the industry, and you'll know what I'm talking about, I mean, you kind of are one, if you've got guys in the industry that are 20 30 40 year vets and this is just kind of the way that they've been doing it, it's about impossible to get some of these guys on board. So my question to you would be, if you were to try and distill it down to three things that the industry could do to be, I'll just use your words, more ethical, what would be the three things that you think that the industry needs to do?
It's super, super simple. Follow the repair procedures.
So it's
that simple. Because here's the deal.
Do they get a lot of flack from the insurance companies then as to, like, that's the reason why they don't?
Yeah. I mean, I've been personally sued by insurance companies with frivolous lawsuits just to tie up my expenses and to tie up my time. We without a shadow of a doubt, we are on, like, we are being, they're without a shadow of a doubt targeting our shop to shut us down. But again, we built our entire business on a foundation of cement as customers. And so it's, dude, we're busier than anybody in town. We stay busy. It's crazy. We're paying our techs more than anybody in Wichita by a lot. We have a culture that's insane. I mean, we're living in an industry right now that everyone keeps talking about. If you pick up any auto body magazine, it almost, like, every other page is talking about a tech shortage and there's no techs. Yep. And dude, I'm turning techs away. Yep. I've had people literally fly in to want to work. They're willing to move their family. Again, most of the people in our industry want to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. They're stopped because the owner of the body shop made a decision to trade those people and the customer for their own personal pocketbook.
God, who cares, right? You're not in the shop anyway. Yep. I know that feeling all too well. Not in the auto body industry.
I remember for me, and here's the deal. I had to learn it too, because I had to learn. I wasn't always following the book to the T when I started learning about these things. I went, oh my God, if I have to do this, that means I have to do that. And there's $30,000 spot resistance welders I had to buy and you know, $30,000 measuring systems I had to buy. And I mean, there's all these scan tools and all these. So what ends up happening is I went, wait a minute, if I follow this to the T, then I have to change everything about my business. I have to change. And so there is kind of this funny thing that those shops, the very few shops that are out there that operate like ours, we all joke about the 30-year technician, because they come in and they say, oh, I've been doing it for 30 years. And that's immediately a red flag to, you're not going to change. You're not going to want to change. You know?
I did not start this podcast, and I mean this in genuine earnest. I did not start this podcast to try and use it as a bait or a trap for people to talk to, them about Clarity Coat. But when I started actually diving a little bit deeper into this industry, I actually realized just how powerful something like Clarity Coat could be to the industry. Now, we're not going to dive into that right now, because I don't want to turn this into a sales pitch for you or anybody listening. That's for a later episode down the road. But I'll cap the point at what you're talking about right now with the grief that you get from the insurance companies is exactly the reason why I think I'm pretty passionate about it. Diversifying the way that a shop makes their money and having it not just be collision repair.
Sure.
I am pretty, pretty heavy on that. And to me, Clarity Coat is one of those things that makes a lot of sense for a lot of shops, but it requires the person doing it to have an open mind.
I was just about to say open mind.
Yep. Because for us, if we get a phone call from somebody that they're a 30-year vet, we almost always just are like, okay, well, we're not going to go any further with this, because it just doesn't work out. And that's, I'm sure there's 30-year guys that are extremely open-minded and everything like that.
Yeah. I go to dinner with I'm not invited to a lot of these anymore. I'm took my head out, but I'll go to these collision dinners. And it's almost like, oh yeah, I wish we could do what you do, Clay. And I'm like, you can. You'd have to get off your ass every once in a while. You know, stop going home at 5 and work on SOPs until 3 o'clock in the morning, like I did for years.
Yeah.
You know, work on financial models of how to pay your techs, because the system that's been created by the insurance company is not beneficial for anybody but the insurance company. It's not beneficial to the technician or their family. It's not beneficial to the... So again, it's like, I hear you 100%. There's this like almost this, well, and again, that's partially what got me into the industry is this, yeah, it's impossible. Wish we could do something. It's this belly aching and bitching. And I'm like, well, do something about it and shut up. You know,
The interesting thing, so one of the questions I have pre-populated, right, or written down is, what is the future of the auto body industry look like to you? And specifically, you mentioned you pay your guys what seems like in a non-traditional way. So how do you pay your guys, and how could that benefit anybody that's, or why should people be thinking about that are listening to this?
Yeah. So we have, number one, the majority of the industry is set up on like a flag based system, like a commission based system. So, and what that does, that creates a selfishness in the shop, because then all of a sudden you're going, I don't want to be a part of the team. I don't want anybody to help me, because then they're going to take my flags. You know, we pay our guys, and we have some people that are on salary. We have some people that are on full commission. We have some people that are hourly plus bonuses. We're consistently doing all kinds of bonuses and stuff throughout the shop. So, you know, there's so many different things. We really pay attention to the person and then kind of formulate the compensation model after their wants and desires and what motivates them.
Gosh, that's awesome.
And again, like I said, the problem with the old system is you get a bunch of guys that just want to just get their flags, and then the quality goes down, but the speed goes up. So you're just ramming and jamming cars. And what you hear a lot out of those kind of shops is, well, I didn't get paid for that. You know, I didn't get paid for that. Or somebody else. It's just like, well, that's not how you build a culture. Yeah. We're fanatical about our culture. I'm telling you, we have people literally flying in just to hang out in our morning meetings, because it's so much different than anything that you see out there. We're very big fans of Simon Sinek and Patrick Lencioni, and Dave Ramsey. You know, we love that entrepreneur leadership mindset and that ability. We do not believe in average whatsoever. And we think that the whole going into work, can't wait till it's 5 o'clock. I promise you this, you'll never hear out of anybody that works at Best Body Shop, "Oh, I can't wait till the weekend," or "I can't wait till five." I mean, it's just ludicrous. And we eliminate that by creating an environment that's transparent and open and honest and vulnerable with each other and a base of trust. And yeah, I mean, when you get a technician, and again, almost every single technician that comes in is beaten and battered by the last shop. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a breath of fresh air. You can almost see life coming back into their veins, because it's like, you mean you're not going to try to take advantage of me? You mean you're not going to try to? It is. It's crazy. Dude, these shops literally would sit there and say, "Hey, the flag time on a pulling a motor is 10 hours. We're only going to give you 5.
Yep.
And it's like, and if you stick your head up and say something, they're like, "Well, then go down the street, go somewhere else." Well, a lot of those technicians did. They came here and I was like, "No, I won't ask you to cut a corner, and I'm not going to make my end come off of screwing you. That's ridiculous." You know, if we both can't grow, I don't want to grow at all. You know,
it's really interesting. So a couple of points. It's really interesting because so in the diesel mechanic world, by and large, you get paid hourly. Mm-hmm. But in the car mechanic world, by and large, you get paid off of flat rate or basically flagged. And two extremely different cultures when it comes to repairs. The car industry is way more about finding the workaround or the hack or the, you know, the most efficient way to get something done, which, you know, you can argue as long as it's not detrimental to the final repair, isn't a bad thing.
100%.
But it's very different. The shop environment is completely different. The attitudes of all the techs, completely different.
A lot less friendly.
Yes, a lot less friendly. And it's just very interesting. But the thing that I wanted to ask you, so you were talking about entree leadership and Simon Sinek and everything like that. Do you happen to listen or have you read any of the books or the podcasts by Jocko Willink?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Jocko, it's a monster.
A beast. So you have read his books?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I think I've only read the first one.
Extreme Ownership.
Yes. I've read that one. I haven't read his follow-up.
Okay. Yet. And for anybody else that's coming onto the show, I'm not going to do this every single time, so you can just stop. But I had someone that was in a leadership position do one of the best things in the world for me back when I was starting up my own businesses, which is they bought me a book and, you know, I read it and it completely just transformed everything about the way I think about things and everything like that. So the thing that I like to do whenever I come across someone that I feel would really benefit from a book is I buy them one out of, you know, 4 or 5 books that I would actually give someone. So as a gift, I would like to buy you The Dichotomy of Leadership, which is his follow-up book.
That's awesome.
You just let me know if you want it in audiobook form or if you want it in hard cover form. And, you know, after we're done with the show or whatever, just give me your address. I'll send it to you free of charge. Awesome. Well, I mean, on me or whatever. And because the reason why I want to do that is.
Dude, that's awesome.
That is how, I mean, what you're talking about right now, that's how I built up my detailing business as well is. It pretty much the exact same thing, but we did do. I operated a lot off of that extreme ownership mindset and still kind of do to this day. And I believe pretty heavily in it. So I'm really glad to see that.
Have you read any of, have you read David Goggins' book?
Okay. I haven't. And Bro. The reason why is,
dude, you will feel like an ant after reading that book. I read that book and I felt like I'm a testosterone driven. I am like, you know, got a can't big tell. Beard. I eat steak. I read that book and I felt just like a pile of shit.
I haven't read it because it's not necessarily something that I'm scared to read, right? It's more so reading books for me or taking in information, whether it be podcasts, audiobooks, books in general, whatever. It's a lot more for me about the stage that I am in yep. business and what I need yep. to be paying attention to. So sure. as an example, right now, I'm way more about, I won't get into it. Larger scale stuff and not so much sure. leadership, because I'm not in sure. the same leadership position that I was in. So I'm not needing to up my game in that category, if that makes
yeah.
sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I will adamantly admit that I do get scared to read books because they heavily influence. And there are certain books that I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready for that level of a change, because they do. yeah. I put in at a certain point. I have a library on Audibles that would make most people freak. I mean, I read books like they're going out of style. In fact, I went to a speaking event one time and the speaker says, "Who here's read this book?" And I raised my hand and he kept going through books and I was like, I kept raising. He's like, "Man, is there a book you haven't read?" And I'm like, dude, I'm addicted.
Yeah.
And it started very similar to what you're saying. A guy bought me a book and I was working my ass off in that 2,700 square foot shop. And you would think, you ever watch Beautiful Mind, Russell Crowe?
Yep.
Dude, I had paper all over the office and everyone that came in, I was, "I'm going to change the industry." Oh, I was just mad, you know, and this guy, I had no idea, was the ex vice president of sales for Bristol Myers Squibb, and is a consultant, an executive coach. He's retired and he does this for fun and he hand selects people. So he came in and saw this and he goes, "Dude, you got something going on and it really excites me. I bought you a book." And I just thought he was a weird customer.
I get
this book. I read it.
What
and
I book? Turn around.
It was The Five Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni. I read the book back to back and called him and I was like, "Okay, what's your sell? What do you want? I'm in." Like, I don't know who this, and that was one of the first books that I ever really like, it changed everything. And then from then on, I remember I did two things. I stopped smoking cigarettes and I started reading books. And I was reading books. Like, I mean, I was going every other day, I'm going through a new book but it all started with that one. I can't imagine where I'd be right now without that person buying that book.
You know, just to kind of cap, this part of the podcast, cause, I think, you know, we've kind of covered it pretty well, but this is part of the reason why I like podcasts so much. Yeah. So what I started realizing was, so first of all, I learned how to speed read here a little while ago. Now, really? There are some books that you can't speed read. Like, for example, fantasy books or whatever. You can't speed read those because the whole part of like reading it is building out the world in your mind and everything like that, right? But what was interesting was, as I was reading these books, I figured out that there is a formula to a book. When it comes to like a self-help book or a business book or, you know, whatever, the kind of books that we're talking about.
Sure.
And if you think about it, every chapter is basically trying to drive home a main point. And most of that chapter is 70 to 80% fluff. And then the last 10 to 20% in the last couple of paragraphs is where they kind of make their point.
Sure.
And then if it's something that you don't quite understand, then, you know, you can kind of read through the fluff to kind of get the point. Now, I still read the fluff, but I kind of like read skim it a little bit. And then I'm like, okay, I kind of see where he's going here. And then I get to the final point of the chapter and I'm like, oh, okay, this is what he's getting at. And then if I need more, then I kind of go back over it. Right. Well, what I realized was podcasts, if you bring Simon Sinek onto a podcast, right. And let's say he just released a book, he's going to talk about most of the main points in the book. And so you can really squeeze in a lot of information from a book. You're getting the skimmed version of it. And sometimes that's not such a good thing, but podcasts are great for that. If you hear a podcast and you get intrigued and you're like, damn, I really want to learn more about that. Well, then get the book. Right. Like that's the kind of the whole point behind it. Right. But podcasts for me have been so huge because you listen to these podcasts, that aren't, I mean, no offense to Joe Rogan. I've never been a fan of him, but, stuff like, well, like Jocko's podcast or whatever, you learn so many great points about leadership and self-development and everything like that from these podcasts that, you almost really don't need audiobooks or anything like that, unless it's something that you're a specific thing that you're trying to go after and you can't seem to find that information anywhere else.
Yeah. I got into podcasts with Grant Cardone. He used to have him and Jared Glant had, you know, a bunch of different podcasts, and he had one that was, you know, all about leadership, and one was all about making money, and one was about, you know, doing family and business and being successful at both. And it was really hard for me to go from a podcast to back to reading books because it felt dead compared to that live community. I mean, it was like a conversation is alive, and there's, you know, a book, it almost feels like somebody thought this out, wrote it out, and now I'm just reading it. Just
very like scripted.
And so, okay, I see the value of both, but.
Three podcasts that you would recommend to guys in the industry right now off the top of your head.
I in all honesty, I couldn't tell you.
Oh.
Grant Cardone doesn't do podcasts anymore. That was a huge one for me. You can go back to his old stuff and it's incredible. As far as the collision, anything that's related to the collision industry, dude, there's nobody out there that's really creating good, healthy content that isn't motivated by an insurance company some way, shape, or form.
Well, business oriented or leadership or marketing, sales, something like that.
There is one guy that does like a grievance with, there's a body shop out of Colorado that does podcasts every Saturday morning. That's pretty cool. But no, I think that, Jocko's incredible. I think that anything that involves, like, I was big into Dave Ramsey's podcast, and I love when he would bring on like people from Chick-fil-A and, it's such a rarity to see, doing the right thing and being successful. It's almost like you do one or the other, you know, you make your money by screwing people, or you don't make any money at all, but you feel good about what you do. And, you know, you look at business models like Chick-fil-A and you're like, no, that's making some serious bank. You know, they're bringing in serious amounts of Skrill, and they're doing the right thing, you know? I think 10X was like the big thing for me though. Grant Cardone woke my ass up to a whole nother level. But I've also, the development for me personally, I mean, right now I'm reading a book called, it's something peace. It's like, which sounds completely crazy for somebody, the anatomy of peace is what the book's called. And, you know, cause I'm learning, like, okay, I've done the war stuff and I've learned how to grind out 20 hour days and how to just rough it out. Well, now I've got an entire team of, we've got 18 employees now. There's 18 of us now. And now I'm learning about, okay, well, how do you sustain this culture by not just putting on a war with them, but actually sustaining peace? And so it changes. If I listen to a bunch of Grant Cardone, I'm probably going to think less about people and more about money, but
yep.
So it changes a lot.
Sales.
Oh my goodness, dude.
Well, I can tell you the couple of podcasts that I listened to and the other, not to override your suggestions or anything, but, so there's one right now, Real AF podcast with, Andy Frisella. Now I will say, I actually think his MF CEO podcast had better content as in regards to business. Real AF can get super political and not that I necessarily mind that, but honestly, it's kind of beating a dead horse at this point. It gets a little old, but it's the information in there is really, really good stuff. Jocko Willink's podcast, which is just Jocko podcast, for anybody listening out there. Now I will tell you, usually the episodes are extremely long. They're 2.5-3 hours long. Yeah. But they hold some really great information in there. And I don't know if I would recommend a third. Actually, the Auto Body podcast presented by Clarity Coat is one that I recommend. just a little plug. I want to kind of get this wrapped up, but the final question that I think I want to ask you, because you've already given so much great insight so far, and you covered a lot of these questions already, is if someone is starting off in this field new, what would be the piece of advice that you would give them?
Man, I get so many phone calls asking that exact question. So here's the deal. Don't take advice on how to grow your business within the industry. I tell people all the time, like, go to a Subway, like a guy that owns a Subway, and ask advice on how to run business from him before going to a body shop conference and learning from those people. The people that run my organization here, none of them have been in the collision industry, and I wouldn't have it any other way, because they literally, you should see when they go to a conference. I mean, it's like they look at people like, you guys are crazy. Why are you doing this? Because commonsensical business is just not commonsensical in the collision industry. So that's what I would also say, get educated in the collision business before actually doing any business in it. You know, you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. Where do you think the future of the industry looks like? Well, the vehicles, technology, and engineering is not going to go backwards. They're not going to one day, you know, Toyota is not going to wake up one day. You know what, guys, it's too much engineering, too much computers. Let's go backwards. It's going to get more and more complicated. And what we're seeing is you can't just beat a dent out and put some Bondo on it anymore without affecting somebody's life. And so get educated in what it actually takes to be successful in the business by doing the right things for the right reasons for the right people. Then jump in. We see a tremendous amount of people that are already in business, find out they're doing the wrong thing, and then they go, well, how do I afford the $250,000 worth of tools that I have to buy overnight? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, what do I do now? I've got all these employees and I've got all these, you know, it's like, yeah, think about that stuff before you get in.
Just kind of a personal question. Now I think I already know the answer to this, and to be very upfront, I don't really particularly care, but do you think that kind of same attitude where what you're talking about, where you should come from the outside of the business to be the best at growing it? Now, again, this is going to be the first episode that goes out, so a lot of these guys that are listening to this are going to be hearing for the first time that, you know, I wasn't an auto body guy, I wasn't a painter.
Yeah.
Do you think that people are going to take this podcast or advice that I give or have people come on and give seriously solely because I'm not one of the good old boys in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you have a perspective that's not tainted. I mean, in an industry full of heavily tainted views, literally the people that we see I don't hire technicians or people that are 30 years experience. We talked about that. We literally have guys, I would rather hire someone that's never been in the industry and train them so that they don't have this consistent trying to fight back to what they're used to. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that I believe that as you go down this road and keep an open mind, you're going to be a breath of fresh air and you're going to say things that everyone's already thinking, but no one has the balls to talk about.
Yeah. Interesting point on that. So I have this really big disdain for traditional businesses, especially when it relates to service-based businesses. And mm-hmm. what I mean by that is when I was a diesel tech, now to be very clear, I was not a great mechanic. Like I don't have the mind for it. Hats off to those guys. Like it takes a very special person to do that kind of stuff. But even when I was in school, I would look at some of the tough stuff that they were teaching in school. And I would look at the teacher and I'd be like, okay, why are we doing this? And then they would give the answer. Right. And I would say, okay, but why? And then they would give the answer. And what I found out is that in most traditional businesses that, you know, they basically just think of this as an example of like, they've been doing basically the same thing for the last 10, 20 years, right? It's not a very adaptable kind of business. What I found out was that when you ask why any more than 3 to 4 times, mm-hmm. the answer you get is, well, because that's just the way we've been doing it.
Yeah.
And it's like,
you're speaking my language. Yeah.
and
challenge everything. You know?
And I look at them, I'm like, okay, well, that's not a great fucking answer. Like,
that's ridiculous.
And so then I'm like, well, why don't we just try it this way? Well, because it won't work. Okay. Like, what is the world going to end? Like, what's the biggest deal? Now I realize that there's some old guys in the business that their blood pressure just went up a mm-hmm. ton and their hearts are beating fast. They're pounding their fists on the table saying, these young'uns just don't know. You're right. Sometimes we don't. And that's where experience comes into play. And I will absolutely always tip my hat towards experience, but don't get stuck in your ways to the point where the technology and or innovations overlap you just because we've always done it.
Yeah. What we are doing in our shop literally is supposed to be impossible. Mm-hmm. We have people flying in to meet with us. And the reason is because of that ability to consistently ask the question, why not? Why would, mm-hmm. why do we do that? Why don't we change that? What's stopping us from changing that? You know, and that tenacity to go, well, that, you know, and getting the answer that is not a good answer and going, well, I'm not going to just accept that. I want to change it. You know, I had a conversation with AJ. He's my production manager here. When I said, hey, I need you to create some kind of a process or system to be able to hold accountable when you write a short sheet from a damage assessment. And he goes, that's impossible. And I said, good. I agree. Now let's create a better way. I told him, I said, look around. And he looks around and he said, everything here was said to be impossible. And the reason why you're here is because we accomplished it. And he goes, okay, you're right. You know, it's like, it was this mindset of like, oh yeah, I got to remember that nothing's impossible, mm-hmm. you know?
So we're going to end here pretty soon, but you reminded me of a podcast. It sounds like you already kind of listened to Jocko's podcast, but did you happen to catch the podcast with Pete from Origin Maine. I think he's been on there 3 or 4 times now.
Oh man, it sounds familiar, but it's been that podcast was a while ago, correct?
He, like I said, he's been on there 3 or 4 times, but his latest time that he got on there. So for you guys that don't, well, probably nobody knows this, but Jocko Podcast, Jocko owns a part of a company called Origin Maine. And Origin Maine was, I'm going to keep a very short version of this, but everybody should go and listen to the first podcast that Pete is on with Jocko. And listen to their origin story. What? Oh, pun intended. But he felt so passionate about making gis, so jiu-jitsu gis, back in America and making high quality ones, that he literally sourced and shipped back cotton looms. And he has some of the only cotton looms in all of America. Sitting in Maine, and he rebuilt them completely by hand. Each cotton loom has well over 10,000 parts, and he did it completely by hand, all by himself. Now, the point that I'm going to make, which is ties into yours, they recently started doing blue jeans. So they also make boots. I have a pair. They are fucking phenomenal. Well worth the money. But anyways, they source the cotton from America. Is all loomed in Maine, and every single piece of it is made in America, sold in America.
Bro, that's gangster.
Now, here's where it gets even more gangster. They started doing this, and in the podcast, he talks about how they got a visit from, I believe it was Wrangler. Mm. And Wrangler comes in, they're walking around, and they go, "How the hell did you do this?" And so he goes, "Well, we just figured it out. Like, yeah, we just did it.
Literally. Yeah."
And the Wrangler rep told him, "Do you realize that nobody, not a single soul at Wrangler knows how to make jeans?" Yeah, you've got the biggest brand, one of the biggest brands in America. Yeah. And basically what he was alluding to is they just use the same old styles and change a few things here or there, but they don't actually know how to literally construct a jean all the way from the bottom up. And he's like, "Do you understand how insanely difficult that is?" And Pete goes, "I don't know. We're doing it." Not to mention the fact that Wrangler, Levi's and all that stuff, not made in America. Nope. And the point behind that being, I think he even said this on the podcast, Wrangler then wanted them to make their jeans. And Pete turned them down. He said, "No, we're not going to do that."
Of course he did.
Which is even more gangster.
Yeah, it is. Like, yeah, go screw off, dude.
But that if anybody is wanting to understand kind of like the very beginnings of that kind of mindset, that is a phenomenal pair of podcasts to listen to. Go to Jocko Podcast, just search Origin Maine or Pete and you'll find them. It is a phenomenal story.
Well, and I can guarantee if you ask Pete or Jocko, they probably know more about how not to make jeans.
100%.
And that's one of the things I learned from 3M that was incredible. We actually, at some point, because of our Facebook page and our Instagram following, they actually, 3M reached out and sponsored us. And actually, we went on some cool things. Got to hang out with Chip Foose and do some video shoots and stuff. But one of the things I learned about 3M is their ability to never punish over mistakes. In fact, they encourage mistakes. That's how innovation is created. And that was something I was like, oh, wow. So you have a bunch of scientists that work at 3M and people that work for 3M that aren't afraid of making mistakes. In fact, just the opposite, because they understand that, okay, if you made a mistake, at least now you know how not to do it. Let's keep going, keep rolling. You know, that's why 3M is one of the most innovative companies on the planet. They come up with all these ideas that are just life-changing.
There's one other thing about 3M that I learned that is also, I think, just amazing, which is their companies or their divisions are not siloed. And what that means is every division or every department knows what the other departments are working on. Yep. And if they have a failure, like you're talking about, they basically, quote unquote, put it up for auction to all the other divisions and say, hey, do you guys, could you use this at all? And I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe that the command strips that are for hanging up stuff inside your house, that actually came from a failed Velcro experiment in a whole different division. They presented it, and you know, whatever division it is that has to do with like interior fucking shit, said, hey, actually that would work great for us because we don't need an adhesive that is super, super strong. We need it to basically hold up 10 pounds. That's it. And we don't need Velcro that it takes a strong man to separate it.
Yeah.
Like we just need something just good enough. And
well, you know, they have so there's this thing called a PPS cup in our,
I'm aware of it.
And so, the PPS cup, the history of the PPS cup was actually that they hired 3M hired a scientist, and I'm probably, hopefully some 3M rep is going to listen to this and go, yeah, it's kind of the story. But long story short, 3M put this person, in a body shop and said, find something that will change their lives and make their lives easier and better. And his his job is to go into a body shop every single day and just watch people work. And that's how he came up with the PPS system, which eliminated aluminum cups altogether. And it created a lot less waste and the cleanup is easier. I mean, it created a vacuum seal instead of, you know, where you could turn the gun upside down and not spill your paint out. And it's that kind of ability to have, and I'm going to call it what it is, like to have the balls to take somebody that makes a good salary and stick them into a shop and just say, hey,
just go create shit.
Go create shit. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like when AJ and I, and I, we have the same thing. In fact, we will, some of my employees are going to watch this or listen to this and they're going to go, oh, this is talking about me. I will literally write somebody up because they're being safe. I've got two employees right now, one that's cost me an absolute ridiculous amount of money in mistakes, and one that has been super, super safe, but he's slow and he's nervous. And I go, I wrote up the one that was slow and I said, you know how much money this other guy's lost me? Yeah, he made a lot of mistakes. I'm like, yeah, and you don't see him next to you in this room. You know, I want that ability to make mistakes as you're growing and learning. Now, of course, if you're making a mistake more than twice, three times, then we're going to have an issue.
Yeah.
But I would rather have that, just like me and AJ talking about how to recreate things. Dude, I'm totally down for AJ to come up with a bunch of flubbers, you know, a bunch of bad ideas, because I know it's on the way to a good idea.
Yeah. Well, Clay, I don't want to take up any more of your evening, but man, what a banger of a first episode. I really appreciate you taking time to do this.
Yeah, absolutely, man. This is fun.
All right, guys. Hopefully you guys liked this first episode. If you did, please make sure to hit subscribe. And for you out-of-body guys that are listening to this or anybody else that's listening to this, share the show. Share it in the Facebook groups, share it in some group chats if you guys have them. I don't know if you guys are still using like written letters or whatever, but like write a letter to you, to your grandmother and say, hey, I really appreciated this episode, whatever it is. Again, like we're not here to sell any product. I just really am very interested in this industry and want to dive more into it and talk to you guys and get some stories about the industry. So Clay, really appreciate you taking the time to do this. You want to just quick give another shout out to what your business is and everything like that so people can go and follow you?
Yeah, check us out on Facebook and on Instagram. We're Best Body Shop. You can't miss us. It's super easy to find us. We're all over the place. And I'm looking forward to the list of haters jumping on here and listening to this. This will get you some followers right off the bat.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you very much. And I hope you have a great day.
Yep. Thanks, man.